Hello, everyone. Thank you for tuning in with us today. At the Kimball Road Church of Christ, we are transitioning into a new quarter, and with new quarters come new classes. And so one of the new classes for this new quarter is the life of David. And that's what we're going to be studying here through this video series, is studies that go throughout the life of David. And today we might just consider this as lesson one, our overview and introduction to the life of David. You know, if I were to ask you what comes to mind when you hear the name David, what would you say? What would you say came to mind? You know, you might say, well, the defeating Goliath. That's got to be top on the list, right? I mean, even people who don't know the Bible well, when you hear about an underdog story today, they say, well, it's a David and Goliath story. So you might think of that. You might think about how he was the king. In fact, he was the greatest king of Israel, aside from God, obviously. But he was one of the greatest kings of Israel, set the standard for greatness in the kings of Israel. You might think about some other details in his life. You might think about how he lived most of his life, at least in the early part, on the run from King Saul. You might think about how his family life was a mess. There's a lot of things that you could think about David. You know, one thing that's unique about him is that his life is one of contrast. You know, you got this unknown shepherd boy and who becomes the king of Israel. You have this rugged warrior who is also a poetic composer. You have the strength that David demonstrated on the throne, and yet the complete weakness he demonstrated at home, in his own home. But you know, out of all the people mentioned in the Bible, there's more Old Testament space given to David than anyone else. And in fact, David is given a title. David is given an incredible title. No one else is. And that is that he was a man after God's own heart. You know, I think because of these things, I think because of the memorable moments in David's life, because of how much of his story we have, because of the amazing ways that God has used him, I think it's easy to erect in our minds this larger-than-life marble statue, Michelangelo-designed statue to him. We might just think that David is some kind of a superhuman phenomenon, a man without flaws or failures. He's just perfect. That's not the case. No, that's hardly the case. Far from the case. David is not polished marble. No, truth to be told, and the scripture here tells it, David was very much a man like the rest of us. And the scripture reveals the weaknesses of David. It reveals the mistakes, the great sins of David. And perhaps that is a lesson in and of itself, to remind us that what made him a man after God's own heart was not the fact that he did not sin. It was what he did in response to his sins. It was a heart that continued to come back to God, even after his failures. I think those will be some lessons that we'll dig into as we get further into our study. Well, David was born 1040 BC to a shepherd named Jesse. They lived in a small town of Bethlehem, he, his father, and his seven brothers. But the time of David is a time of chaos. At least when David enters into the scene, chaos is taking place in Israel. You see, 40 years before David's inauguration, the period of the judges has come to an end. And under the rule of aging Samuel, Israel makes a demand. And they say, we want to be just like everyone around us. We want to be like the nations around us, and we want a king. So in 1 Samuel chapter 8, says in verse 4, all the elders of Israel gathered together and came to Samuel at Ramah, and they said to him, behold, you have grown old, and your sons do not walk in your ways. Now appoint a king for us to judge us like all the nations. Israel was growing weary of pointing up to the heavens whenever their neighbors from other nations says, well, where's your king? Where's your leader? No, they wanted a real king. They wanted a man who would lead over them, who would judge them, who would be in front. This signature celebrity to lead the way for God's people. Well, Samuel responded the right way, because in verse 6, he prays and expresses the fact that he feels this righteous jealousy on God's behalf. And the Lord tells Samuel in verse 7, listen to the voice of the people in regard to all that they say to you, for they have not rejected you, your leadership, Samuel. No, they're not rejecting you. No, they've rejected me from being the king over them. That's what God thought. They wanted a king. They wanted a man to represent the nation. And God says, and choosing a man and asking for a king, it's obvious you don't see me as your king. You don't see me as your sovereign. You want someone else in me. And God's answer is, give it to him. Well, Samuel responds in the bigger part of this chapter, verses 10 to 18, and he warns them. He says, you're looking for a king, and in your mind, you think it's going to be great. What could go wrong? And he warns them, if you do this, if you choose this path, it will bring farther, bigger consequences than you are able to see today. He's going to tax you, and he's going to take your money and your lands and the things that you own, and he's going to take your sons, and he's going to throw them into war, and they're going to have to fight his battles. This is not going to be the way that you think it is. But in verse 19, they don't listen. They don't listen. No, they are insistent on their desire to be like the nations around them. And so God gives them in to their own plea. God's way of punishing this rebellious nation is by giving them exactly what they asked for. They wanted a king like the nations around them. And so God appoints a king who is just like the kings and the nations around them. The first king of Israel, King Saul. You know, face value, Saul seemed like a good king. I mean, he looked it. He looked the part. He's tall. He's handsome. Seems muscular. But it wasn't long. It wasn't long before his immaturities, his spiritual shallowness began to demonstrate itself. He usurped Samuel's authority as a high priest in 1 Samuel 11. He completely disregarded God's commands in 1 Samuel 15. Selfishness turned to egotism. He's building up statues to himself. And Saul eventually succumbs to paranoia, suspicion, and even suicide. It's a train wreck for a man and a leader. Well, David was chosen not to reflect the kings of the nations around them. No, David was God's choice. No. David was Israel's second king, the choice of God, a man who reflected God's heart. Here's some things about David, some of his accomplishments, just to kind of give an overview here. He is the second king. He reigned for 40 years, 7.5 years over Judah, and 33 years over all of Israel. He captured Jerusalem, the city that will become the central capital for the nation. David is one who captures Jerusalem. Jerusalem would be called the City of David. It's found in Nehemiah chapter 3 and verse 15. The nation grew from around 6,000 square miles to 60,000 square miles. Take that in. How far David expanded the national landmass. David imposed a tax system internally and forced other nations to pay tribute. And so he, through his actions, added to the wealth of the nation. He developed a strong army. In fact, 1 Chronicles 12 identifies 339,000 troops. And under the reign of David, Israel defeats their enemies. Those Philistines who seem to always be the thorn in Israel's side, they are subdued. Israel wins every major conflict under David. And so the nation becomes wealthy, Israel becomes power, and afterwards, every king, all other kings would be compared to David. He sets the standard. There's a historian named Leon Wood, and he said this, in contrast to the rule of Saul, David's reign was one of unification and development of the kingdom. He brought the tribes together, established an efficient government, organized the priesthood, and maintained an army that scarcely lost a battle. He inherited a divided, war-torn land, and when he died, left an empire. David was not only a strong king in contrast to his predecessor, he was the strongest king Israel ever had. He was the measure to others. To be a king like David came to be the highest accolade a successor could have. So rightly might it say in 1 Chronicles chapter 14 and verse 17, then the fame of David went out into all the lands, and the Lord brought the fear on him to all the nations. And so you just think of the national accomplishments of David. There's also the spiritual accomplishments, the great things he did spiritually. David wrote 73 of the 150 Psalms, some of the greatest expressions of worship and praise. Some of the most open expressions of man's thoughts are found in David's Psalms. David is the one who brought the Ark to Jerusalem. Years before, it was captured by the Philistines, and they proudly placed it in front of their golden idol, their god, and it didn't work out well for them. The Philistine cities were plagued with boils, men were dying, and so it came back to a border town in Israel, Beth Shemesh. That lasted very shortly until those men decided to take a peek inside the Ark. Don't do that. God's people didn't listen. They didn't listen to God's rule. Don't touch. Don't peek. Treat the things that are holy as holy. Well, finally, it returned to Israel in the house of Abinadab and Kirjath-Jearim, some about 10 miles west of Jerusalem. And when David is a king, it's still there. And so he brings it back to Jerusalem. And we'll look at that story here in a couple of lessons. David is the one who divided the priests into 24 courses. They were divided into, the Levites were divided into singers, gatekeepers, officers, and judges. But perhaps, though it's said simply, catch what it's said of David in Acts 13:36 when it says that David served the purpose of God and his generation. You know, at the end of the day, and all that David did, he served the purpose of God and the time in which he lived. I don't think there's a greater thing that could be said of any one of us, that we just serve the purpose of God in our generation. We are alive here and now by the working of God, by God who establishes the boundaries of our habitations, Paul says in Acts 17. And what is expected of us is no different than what's expected of David, that we simply use our time and our talents to the best of our ability to serve the purposes of God. Well, one other detail to consider this is that David had a unique family. David had 8 wives, several concubines, and 21 children. And even though he's a man after God's own heart, and there's so many amazing qualities about David, both as a spiritual disciple, maybe to use a better term, a servant of God, but both also he was an immense leader, a great leader of Israel. For some reason, those qualities did not come over to the home, because his house life was a wreck. Within his family, there would be rape and murder and hatred, a conspiracy to take the throne. One of the sad things about David's life is how pitiful things were for him in his home. And then David dies around the year 970 BC. You know, I think in a study like this, we're reminded that we see the plan of God unfold. David plays a part in God's plan to redeem man, because it is through David that Christ will come. Christ comes, and he will occupy the throne of David, but he occupies it forever. There's a lot of great, applicable, very timely lessons we're going to find as we dig through the life of David. And so I encourage you, come back and study with us. In our next lesson, we're going to get started and see how David is introduced to us in this story. Where is he when we find him, and how does his story begin here in this 1 Samuel chapter 16 chapter. So I look forward to you studying with us. Come back. Any questions or thoughts you have, share them along. And I hope this study will be a great blessing to us, to me, and to you. Have a wonderful day. Look forward to seeing you again soon.